And welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Podcast. Today we have a fabulous writer, director, actress, actor. Who knows what else she can do? I would say Weather Girl, but she might get mad at me. Weather Woman? Her film... Pardon?
Meteorologist.
There we go. Meteorologist. Girl scene director Tucky Williams is here. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
I'm excited. I mean, I watched a two-hour film that had very few men in it. I think might have had one. And I could have been wrong at that one point.
Yeah, he was in a dress.
Which is fine. I have no issues with that. So let's start right there at the beginning of the concept. How is writing a film with no men in it, really? You don't see that anymore.
There are lots of movies with no women, so this wasn't like an idea. This wasn't an original idea at all. What the cast is. It was only ladies' parts. A lot of my actor friends were kind of sad. They couldn't be in it. They'd been in the TV series. They couldn't be in the movie. But, you know, movie's shorter, so it was more compact in time. So we have, I think it's 8 amazing actresses in this film.
You have a lot. But before we get there, I want to say, I know this was a TV series, but you didn't send that to me. So you have to help me out a bit in the background. How long did it run and where was it on?
Oh, well, I mean, this has been going on for 10 years. And the series was originally on Blip TV. And now, starting in 2017, Amazon took it. And it's been on Amazon ever since then.
Oh, cool. Now I know where to find it. Great. Now there's something I can follow up on. So when you're writing a movie as opposed to the TV show, do you find it more difficult to write for a movie? Because, I mean, you're tighter.
I think my best place is in television. I don't know. This was, like, my first sit-down-and-write-a-feature-film movie. And I feel like, you know, everybody has their place where they belong. And I think TV is the best place for me. I liked making a movie. I liked having it be short and bam, bam, bam to the point. But it's harder to fit so much content into such a short period of time.
Well,
I really like to explore characters and stuff.
Okay, you have a two-hour runtime. Let's be honest, Joe. That is a long film.
That is a long movie.
And, I mean, everybody in your film has a background story, has a plot development, has something to do.
Yeah.
Was there a longer cut of this?
There could have been. Let's put it that way.
So how did you feel writing for everybody? Did you feel that everybody should have something to do? Or you're like, okay, I know this character from TV. They're going to have this motivation? Or
it was only one of the characters came from the TV show.
Okay.
So it's sort of like every iteration of Girl Scene. There are like 3 different seasons of it, pretty much. Every different iteration has had a completely different new cast. And then so I had the one character hold over, and then I had some other actresses from some other stuff that I've done. And so this is all new characters. It was new people I got to discover and get to know.
So how does that work? I mean, every season, so we could call this season 4 almost of your show.
Probably, yeah.
How do you find new people to work with constantly?
I'm good. I'm a good casting agent. I'd like to be a casting agent. I was really lucky to find, if you look hard enough, you find amazing people. And I found 2 people who had never, ever done anything before, and they wanted to be actresses, and so I was like, they really jumped in off the deep end with this. I was like, you really need to be prepared for what's coming. This is your life is going to be different forever, and I don't think they believe me.
It's different. I want to discuss your script writing. Write for the actors, or do you write your film on whole first? And because you're the writer, can you change it on set if you find something else working better?
Absolutely. Yes to all of those. If I know who's going to play the part, I write to whoever's playing the part. If I don't know who's playing the part, then what I do is I think about an actor I know or character I know from TV or movies. And I think, well, what would this character or actor, how would he or she say it? And then that's how I do that. And then I cast the part. And then a lot of times something doesn't come naturally out of someone's mouth, so then you change it right at the last minute. But, I mean, there's no improvisation on my sets at all. There's one person who's allowed to, that's Ronnie Jones. Being able to improvise is a very, very rare gift, and, like, very, very, very few actors have it. So there is one person who's allowed to improvise, that's Ronnie. It's because she can do it. I mean, I can't do it. She can just do this thing where she can add something, and it hits and makes the scene work. But you got to find the right people who can do it.
Fair enough. So you're working with 2 new actresses that have never done this before.
Too new to acting. They just done theater before, and nobody else I'd only worked with, and then in addition to them, I'd only worked with two of the other actresses before. So everybody was new pretty much.
So how is that being a director? I mean, you got to act and direct at the same time with two new people that you don't really have never done movies before. So how do you do all that?
It's really, you just work really hard. My sincere answer is just work and work and work and work and work and prepare like crazy. You can't over prepare. There's no such thing as over preparing. That's the way to do it. I mean, leave nothing to chance. Have all your bases covered and have a backup plan for when things go wrong.
So when you were prepping for this, I mean, I did notice everybody had their own costuming, and I do want to discuss, I think costuming was something you were really after in your film. Correct me if I'm wrong. So how was costuming for this film and bringing costumes? Because everybody's in their own look.
Yeah, well, that was all them. They did that. They were really excited about, you know, like I said, they were excited about being in a movie, so they brought their own costumes, and that was them. I mean, some of the stuff, I think my contribution was the Ryan character. I bought all her underpants. And that's about all I gave. They brought the rest.
Well, that's nice as an independent filmmaker going, here you go, we brought our costumes. That saved you some money.
It did. I mean, I didn't expect them to show up with all that. I was like, oh, okay. That's great. I just expect people to show up with their regular clothes, but they really put in a huge effort. They were even sending me pictures ahead of time from the scenes. Like, I'm going to wear this for the scene. And I'm like, okay, great.
I did want to say one thing on the touch. I don't know if it's you doing the editing. The names on the screen really helped me know who was who.
Thank you. No one's commented on that yet, but I felt like that was important to just, here, let's get that out of the way.
It helped me a lot. Like, this is a big cast. So when you start off the film, I like to know who's who. Even if I don't remember 10 minutes later, at least I go, oh, wait, that was this person. I can back up and check it. And that helped me out a lot.
Right. That's what you're supposed to remember. If you are listening and haven't seen the movie, is what it is every time, the first time a character appears on screen, their name appears right next to their face. Because we're being very meta in this film. So that's what we're talking about here. So, yeah. And it's sort of in this 80s. Graffiti spray paint kind of thing.
Oh, I really liked it. I thought it was excellent.
Thank you.
I can't believe nobody's commented on that. That's upsetting to me. That was like right there.
Thank you so much.
So,
well, I mean, maybe that's a thing. That means they didn't, it wasn't, you know, in their face. You want all these subtle things to remain subtle.
Oh, no, I disagree. I like that. I like, okay, subtle things. You use a strong use of colors throughout your film.
Mm-hmm.
I've not seen that for a while. I mean, you do see it occasionally, but I mean, the pinks and the purples really stand out. Now, was that lighting on set or is that an added effect later?
It was both.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that all goes to the cinematographer, Mark Holmer. He shot it and he did all the lighting. So I just kind of was like, do this, you know, like make it look like it's the 80s. And he did the rest. So he deserves all the credit.
So on your set design, how did you decide to do the 80s? Because, I mean, it did feel very 80s to me with the clothes and the look and the colors and jukeboxes and things I recognized when I was a kid.
Well, I mean, who doesn't love the 80s, right? And I think, like I said, the cinematographer and I, we both sort of got into this genre of music called synthwave, and it was sort of like the 80s, but kind of reimagine like the 80s were happening today. And that was, I think, the aesthetic we were going for was 80s, but it's happening today.
I mean, when you were doing your set design, did you say we need more purple? Do we need more pink? Because I mean, it's all there.
He did that. He brought that out.
So he's the one that brought me the ghetto blaster, the mask, the unicorn. In the one room, I noticed there was a unicorn. I'm like, there's a lot of stuff in that one room.
Not the props. He brought the color.
That was...
The 80s was everybody, but he brought the color to it and gave the film a look.
So I just want everybody to know, your film does not contain much, any nudity, really, other than some side boob. Was that a plan on you beforehand to tell them, nope, there's no nudity, we're just going to do it this way?
It was just never a discussion.
Okay.
Why would it be?
I'm just wondering. I don't know. I also want to go into the prop swords. They're pretty cool.
Oh, thank you. My mom did the props. So I'll make her watch this and she'll really appreciate that.
So how long did it take your mom to make a sword?
Oh, she didn't make a sword. I borrowed a sword from a good friend.
Oh.
She didn't make a sword, but no, the sword's a real sword.
Okay.
It's a broadsword, historically accurate.
Fair enough. You have a lot of smoking on set. I did notice that, which you don't see in films anymore. So what have your reaction been from people seeing all that smoking?
Nobody has said anything. Like, you bring a totally new perspective of this that I really love. I'll know my reaction to it is the cinematographer and I, we got sick. We never want to make a movie with smoke in it again. But I think that was really important. I'm glad we did it. I think it was really important to let people know, hey, this is the 80s, because that's one of the ways you can tell when a time period is supposed to be, is it's like, there's smoking. It must be like the 70s or 60s or 80s. It's definitely not present day.
Yeah, I mean, oh my God, I find that people do not ask you about these things. It's kind of funny.
No, they're not asking me about this stuff, so I'm really enjoying this.
You told me earlier that you find a lot of people. Now, do they come to you and say, hey, I want to be in your movie? Because I want to really discuss how you got your cast together. You're saying you know all these people. So how do you know them? How do they come in? How do you know they're going to fit?
I use Backstage, and I put up casting notices, and what 2,000 actresses auditioned for this movie.
Oh, wow.
And I looked at every single one of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't audition. They applied for this movie, and I went through every single one of them.
How does that feel as a director to sit there and watch 2,000 different people go, yep, that's the one I want?
It's exhausting, though, because, one of the new actresses was one of the first to audition. I mean, to apply and audition and get the part, like, right away. She was so good. And then I was getting really sick with looking at cast. I just wasn't finding exactly the right person for the Ryan character. I don't know, Ryan, that character. And so it was, I was like, this is the last day I'm going to do it. This is the last night I'm going to look at anybody. And, of course, the last actress who applied was the one I ended up using. And she was perfect. She was better than I could have ever imagined.
One thing I found very important to get styles from the 80s is the hairstyles, which you have spot on, and makeup. Because I did notice everybody had makeup on. Lots and lots of makeup. So is there a makeup story you can give me, or I'm just pushing something here? Because it looked like – I thought it might run with all those lights going on.
Well, I want to apologize to the audience on behalf of one shot of me. I had way too much makeup on. It was everything had been shot. We just needed to do this insert of me really quickly. And 2 days before – someone ran into the back of my car. So I was fine. I thought I was fine. But then I was on autopilot and I was putting my makeup on. So it's like this close-up shot, but I have like makeup for like a mile away. So I've been meaning to since film came out. Apologize for having done that. But I was really, really out of it. And the makeup, there's the actress who plays Bridget is actually a trained makeup artist and hairstylist. So like, she went to school for it and she didn't do everyone's makeup, but it ended up being that everyone ran to it and they were like, please, Amanda, come fix this. Please fix my hair. Please fix my makeup. You know, everybody ended up asking her to do that. And of course, my attitude was go big, go heavy.
Oh, I love it. So go back to the prop thing for a second. I just realized, did your mom make the, I think it's Ryan that has the mannequin. Was that your mom?
No, again, the director of photography had the mannequin.
Okay.
I needed a prop. I was like, what's the weirdest thing any of us has? I wrote to my friends, what's the weirdest thing anybody has? It was his mannequin.
That is a weird thing when that thing reveal happens. I was kind of like, oh, that's interesting.
Thank you.
I like I said, I think the props pay so much more into your film, props and things. So how many houses did you use to film this? I mean, use a lot of bedrooms. Three, because I have two written down as my guess. Pardon?
Three locations total.
Because I have an apartment location, two houses. Am I missing something?
Three houses. There was the party house, there's my house, and then there was Ryan's house.
Okay. So the party house is not somebody's house. That's just where you kept. You shot the same parties in the same house all the time?
Somebody back to the house, yeah. I got that house. That was a find. you have to always be on the lookout for stuff. And I knew I wanted to use that house for something. And I had it in my back pocket for over a year. And then so finally this came up. I was like, okay, I need that house now.
So how did you find your other two houses? Were they friends or were they?
My house is my house, and then the other house is my DP's house.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes your life much easier.
Yeah, I was really glad he let me use his house for Ryan's house. I was really lucky.
I do feel your film at times, maybe it's the way you write, is like a stream of consciousness at times. I find the characters are always talking to themselves, always talking about their feelings to each other, and then it'll jump to something else. Because you could almost run your film with very few edits, I found. I know they're there, but you could do it without it. Because I think that's the way you write. It's just the way they think. Because they're always thinking and always talking and always moving to the next place.
Oh, thank you. I would take that as a compliment to the editing, that it feels that way. I think editing's like doesn't get enough credit for being a major, major, major part of acting performances even. I would say every single acting performance, about 40% of it could be chalked up to the editor.
Oh, I absolutely agree. An editor could make or break your film. I will agree. So you do have lots of music throughout your film. Let's give some props to that.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Bless you. I went through a lot to get that music.
So talk about it, please.
All right. So the movie, The Aesthetic, was inspired by synthcore. It's a genre of music. And I, you know, in between scenes, I would play synthcore to get the actresses, like, in the right state of mind. During scenes, if there was no audio, I would be playing synthcore. And so I, after the movie, I was like, great, I'll just get some synthcore. And I didn't know how hard it was to work with people in the music industry. So I got to deal with like music managers and stuff and all that. And they're like, that was a surprise. They're pretty, Hollywood, I guess was the word for it. But I got the music I needed. So a lot of people were really nice. New Retro Wave, Betamax, Night Run 87, VHS Dreams, they all were fabulous. And then I got Clayton's song, A Thousand Years, which ended up kind of being the theme to the movie. And I think that was, I mean, getting A Thousand Years was, that's the theme song and that's in the trailer. And I think that having this theme, I don't know, there's something about that song, right? It's just, it's not the BPM, it's just the energy he puts into it. He's this extraordinary talent and he puts that, injects into the song. The way I picked it, here's a good story, is I was going over a particular scene with no audio. It was my scene in bed with Amanda. And I just, you know, you need to hear it when you're editing it. So I needed to hear something. So I said to the editor, I was like, grab a Clayton song, Scandroid song. I was like, grab a Scandroid song and lay it over this so I can watch it with music playing. And it was that. I was like, just randomly grab one. It was that song. And then so I was like, okay, I have to get this song now. It was just so perfect. And nothing else fit. You know, we would lay other music over it. No, it didn't work. It was only that. So I'm really happy to have been able to work with Clayton.
I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah.
So do you have another film on the same idea to make a fifth season of this?
Oh, well, I'm a little bit exhausted, but, you know, and then everything's on hold right now for a long time. So I have a long time to think about it.
That seems fair.
Yeah.
How are your actors? Did they enjoy their experience, the new ones? I mean, you've obviously done this numerous times.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they said it was movie summer camp because, I mean, I had two of them staying in. Like, I live right up there. Right next door is, like, a Marriott, a courtyard by Marriott. So they were staying there. And then there was another actress who she was staying somewhere else, but she ended up moving into their hotel room. And so they all stayed in one hotel room. And it was, you know, within walking distance of me. And so they called it movie summer camp. It was fun. Everybody was really happy. And like I said, I'm very talented. So it was a great experience.
So would you consider your movie just fun to film? Did you enjoy your experience doing everything?
Did I enjoy doing everything? Well, yeah, I think you're pulled into it. When you're called to something, you're not pushed. You're not forced to do it. You're pulled. So, I mean, it was, I don't think anyone is, I don't think most people don't work this hard, period, on anything. But it's like, it's not a chore when it's something you love and something you really, really want to do.
Since I love to ask this question every once in a while, you're in charge of everything. How is catering? I think that's the hardest thing to do.
Important to me is that everybody be fed, because hungry hungry actors or unhappy actors. So my big thing was to feed everybody whatever they wanted, and I hope I came through for them. But a lot of times people won't anticipate being hungry, so it was always like putting out food, just putting it out there, like, here's food. A thing about catering, if you're a director, you don't know this, you can't just buy food and leave it out. People won't eat it. For some reason, you have to, like, take the cover off. Like, if you buy a tray of sandwiches or whatever and lay it there, they won't eat it. You have to take the cover off. If you buy, like, chips for, you know, dipping into hummus, you have to undo the hummus, and you have to, you can't just have the bag of chips open. You have to dump it out into a bowl. It's all these little things, but it's really important that all the talents stay fed. And I've learned that from being an actress myself on movies, is they didn't feed you enough and you get exhausted, and then your performance, it isn't as good, because you can't like run off and leave and go get something. So, you know, then the performance is left lacking.
So after all this, you're going to do this again. That is what I'm getting from here. I know you're having a little break right now with the pandemic, but
I'm going to do a movie again. Just, yeah, I don't know if it's going to be that, but yeah, I'm going to do a movie again for sure.
Okay, great. You're just making me laugh. Sorry. I'm really not going to get through this today. We're moving on to fun questions if you're ready.
Already?
Oh, I could discuss more things, but I mean, I want people to see the film. Fine, we can go into a bit more. I will pick something. Right. Why did you choose the colors you did then? The pink and the purple, why did you choose those as opposed to a red or maybe even a yellow?
Neon, when you get the neon feel of like Tokyo in the 80s, that kind of flashy, just the neon sign flashing, as opposed to like the more subdued red and brown that I see a lot of times. And I feel like with 80s aesthetic, what I'm seeing in everything is red and brown on everything, maybe some yellow. And this is just completely cool colors. Cool, not trendy cool. Cool as in the shade colors. And it gives a different feel of the 80s.
Have you had any people give you negative reaction to your film that's upset you?
Oh, I mean, yeah. That's the whole thing. You didn't know about that?
No, I have no idea what you're talking about. No, I don't.
Oh, okay. It became a big story because I guess there was sort of this alt-right anti-woman movement. Anyway, they got on Amazon and they got the movie taken down because they said it was – they just said horrible, horrible, like, racist and anti-Semitic and woman-hating and gay-bashing things. And they left so many messages on there that Amazon took the movie down. So it turned into a huge, huge incident.
I don't think that's fair to anybody. Just don't wild comments, Amazon. Turn off the comments.
Yeah, no, they respond to the comments instead of the content of the comments. It's like maybe these people are insane. We should delete the comments, but they didn't do that.
Well, I apologize for that. I don't know who's doing that, but that's just
not. Yeah, I mean, you know the hate crimes laws in Toronto, right? Yes. Like this stuff they were saying, I mean, would have been, it was in clear, I mean, it was of course not in Toronto, but it's in clear violation of pretty much every hate crimes in terms of hate speech legislation.
Okay. Can I go to fun questions
now? We don't have that here. Okay.
Sorry.
The stuff that you guys get in Toronto that keeps people safe, we don't have that here in America.
What?
You know, and people get upset because they say First Amendment. It's like, well, okay, but it's not going to be enforced unless it's especially egregious, and that's why it's there.
Fair enough. Okay, I'm going to fun questions now. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. You can discuss these all you want. I can even find you more if you're not happy with the three I've chosen. Because your first time on the show, your favorite film?
I'm going to name a bunch, but Jackie Brown.
Love it.
Yeah. I could name a lot more, though.
Go ahead.
I'm not committed to that. Boogie Nights. David Fincher is probably my favorite director right now. Casino, Terminator 2, Pulp Fiction, the Aliens with an S, not the first one, the second one. I'm leaving out stuff, but there's just Pineapple Express, probably my favorite comedy.
Well, there you go. Some great choices there. There's nothing wrong with those.
Yeah. Yeah.
The one book on film that made you want to be a director.
No books. No books on film. Nothing ever made me want to be a director. Well, Spike Lee was the only person who ever made me want to be a director. And I got to meet him when I was very, very young. And that was all him.
So maybe I should ask, what did Spike Lee say to you to make you want to be a director then?
He didn't say anything to me specifically. I went and saw him speak. And it was around the time Malcolm X was – he spoke a lot about Malcolm X, the movie, and what he had to go through to get that made. And basically, I mean, to sum it all up is he went through hell every step of the way, every single step of the way, basically because of what it was about. And, you know, people were fighting him to make this movie that needed to be made and that people actually wanted to see. And I would say I learned a lot of stuff. One of the things I learned is that if you want to get a movie made – and you're not a white man, it's nothing but a constant, constant, constant battle. Like, you're going to face stuff you haven't even imagined. So when I got into it and I was facing the stuff that you wouldn't imagine, I mean, just discrimination, like you would not believe just because I wasn't a man. I was like ready for it and I was ready to fight and I was like, I'm going to make this no matter what.
Okay, so I have one more question, but I want to go back to what you just said, because that opens up the can of worms. Who is fighting you?
What do you mean?
Like, is it the studios fighting you? Is it producers fighting you? Who is stopping you from making your movie?
It's sort of like a lesson I've had to learn, is that if people start to show signs that they don't like me being in charge, like... Like, I'm not going to be polite about it. It's time to go. And some people just seriously have a problem with the women in charge. And you just have to weed them out because they don't show up saying, hey, I have a problem with women, you know, controlling things. They don't show up acting like that. They just have to reveal themselves slowly. And so you have to be ready to be like, yeah, no, we don't want you around. I mean, I would definitely say if I had done all this and been a gay man, I would have gotten a lot farther. I would have had people coming to me saying, hey, let's make this into a, you know, an HBO series. But I mean, because it's just a girl making a movie, whatever. You're taken a lot less seriously. And of course the whole Amazon thing was like, well, we're taking down cause it's a lesbian movie. And obviously that's not okay. And I know I'm sounding flippant when I say that, that is pretty much the attitude. It's like, well, if it's about lesbians, then no. That's not important. So that's why I can't speak for them, but that's why it didn't matter, I think, to anybody. I'm not speaking for them. Because it's just like, oh, it's just a movie about lesbians, you know, whatever.
Wow.
Like I said, the States is a lot different. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, there's certain things that can only happen in Canada. And I mean, like take, for example, Katie Lang. Like, she could have only happened in Canada, right?
Yeah,
that wouldn't have happened in America. You know, she came to America, but only a country like Canada is that kind of thing. Are people seen past, you know, are people's differences celebrated? I mean, I'm not saying that they are celebrated in Canada. I'm just saying Canada is the only place where that opportunity exists in such abundance.
Yeah, I got a quick story. I saw Katie Lang when she was nobody. I remember sitting, you said you used to live in Toronto, so I went to Ontario Place and saw Katie Lang, maybe a couple thousand people there, and my dad took me. We had a great time. That's years ago.
Oh, which era was it?
Oh, that'd be the 80s, I guess.
Lang, all that?
Yeah, she used to have go-go dancers in cages. She'd be singing, and behind her there would be cages with go-go dancers in them. I think that was it. I remember that. It was a long... She was no... Like, you didn't know who...
That sounds like 94.
No. See, my dad would have been passed away by that. So it had to be pre-90s.
Okay. I don't know them.
Okay, no problem. That's when I saw Katie Lang. Quick side story so everybody knows. I saw Katie Lang years and years ago. My last question for you.
Never
know. What advice can you give, or maybe you could do this for all, writer, director, actress... What advice would you give to somebody just starting out, making their first independent film?
Oh, well, is you have to do everything and be prepared to do everything. Find some great people who will help you. like, really, like, get to know people. First off, you can't just jump into it without knowing anybody. So work with people locally until you know everybody and make friends with everybody and figure out who your group is and who you want to work with. And then my other thing is, I think people think money's going to fall from the sky. That's not going to happen. So you have to be prepared to pay for everything yourself, and you have to be prepared to fill in for any job if necessary. And you have to, you have to love it. I mean, a girl wrote to me and she said, I want to know how to make movies. And so I wrote back to her. I was like, this and this and this. And she was like, okay, I'm good. I don't want to make movies anymore. I appreciated that. So a lot of hard work. And then if you're in a position where you're a woman or a minority, it's going to be a lot harder. And it's sort of like people are going to start fights with you that you don't want to have. Like, you're okay. You're okay with everybody and you're fine. But people are going to start, they're going to have a problem with you. And you have to be prepared for that.
Wow. It sounds like you're a very strong, independent woman after listening. I love it. I think this is great.
Thank you.
If people can't find your film on Amazon, or is it back on Amazon, where can they find your film?
Yeah, they put it back on Amazon because, well, the story came out on After Ellen. They did an investigative report on After Ellen. And, you bring out my Toronto accent. I love it. It's slowly surfacing. Oh, I love it. I was like, I hope I talk to him and my Toronto accent comes back out. So she did an investigative report on it. And then once that came out, I kind of publicized it like crazy. And I let everybody know, hey, if you don't like this, that this has happened, email Amazon at their email address, the certain email address, and let them know how you feel. And then all of a sudden, 2 weeks later, it was back on.
Oh, that's awesome. I think that's great. Is there someplace else they can see it besides Amazon?
Well, when the pandemic hit, back when people in America cared and everybody was at home, I decided everybody was really bored, so I put it on YouTube. Of course, everybody's just decided the pandemic was over, but I've still left it up. So you actually can watch it on YouTube now.
Yeah, but we want you to watch it on Amazon so you make some money off it.
Yeah, I want you to watch it on Amazon. Yeah, I do, so I can earn, you know, whatever. But it's fine to watch it on YouTube. Actually, it's not available in Canada on Amazon, but it's available in Canada on YouTube, so, you know.
Well, there you go, Canadians. So use that VPN that we're not supposed to be using. That's a good way to watch it on Amazon.
I opened it up to Canada.
Okay, well, thank...
So it should be working. It should work. I specifically made sure it was available in Canada.
Well, thank you for your time. You were awesome, and I can't wait to have you on in the future.
Thank you for having me. This was really, really fun.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.